Side 2, Old 20th, by Joe Haldeman. Continuing on page 43.
This is serious, Jacob. It's no time for word games.
It's more serious for me than it is for you, I said quietly. Though I suppose you'll be needing the practice.
Well?
Your loving God wasn't content with the carnage overseas. He had to send this blight around the rest of the world.
One might be punishment for the other, he said sharply. Men started that war, not God.
You can't know that. He flinched at my vehemence. Anyhow, if he knows everything that's going to happen, why does he punish us when it happens? You've never heard that one before, I'll wager.
You're fevered. The disease is affecting your mind.
I coughed into the paper. Answer that one for me, and I'll agree to be baptized. He picked up the Bible and held it to his chest.
Without free will, moral choice would be meaningless.
I see. I chose to contract influenza, and now I'm being punished for that choice. Like the boys who choose to cower in the trenches while other boys toss bombs at them.
I'm not doing you any good, Jacob. I'll come back later when you're more...
Ask for me tomorrow, and you shall find me a grave man.
Yes, of course, he said, backing away. Tomorrow.
He eased through the door and clicked it shut loudly behind him. Where did that grave man thing come from, I wondered. It sounded like Shakespeare. I hate Shakespeare.
Hortense came in, looking over her shoulder. You naughty thing, she said. What did you say to scare the reverend so?
Raving, I think. I should be more considerate of him. He's just doing what he's paid to do.
Maybe you gave him something for his next sermon.
She bent to pick up the fallen mug.
Should I refill this, or ask Miss Brewer to?
No, don't. The cough is bad enough without it.
On cue, I began coughing.
This was the most severe yet. Hortense held out a large cloth. The amount of foam and blood was disturbing. She dropped it in a pail out of sight, and I fell back heavily. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw her take something out of her apron pocket. What's that? She set a small booklet next to my left hand.
Just something to distract you when you feel like it. Take you away from here.
I think I'd rather rest for a while.
You do that, Jacob.
She turned off the electrical light beside me.
Don't forget it's there, though. You can reach the lamp?
Sure, I demonstrated, pulling the chain twice. She patted my arm.
See you in your dreams?
In fact, I couldn't sleep, though I was glad to be alone. The fire had burned down to embers, and everything was a soft reddish-orange twilight. My eyes pursued fantastic shapes through the random patterns of the stucco ceiling, animals turning into human faces, or inhuman, which then became part of maps or buildings. I hadn't coughed in a while, I realized, but my breath was alarmingly fast and shallow, heartbeat loud and insistent in my ears. I almost rang the bell to bring Nell or Hortense to play the blasted gramophone just to drown out the sound of my heart. Instead, I turned on the lamp and picked up the booklet that Hortense had left. Vacation lands, it said, in slightly fusty Victorian capitals, in an arc over a sun setting into the sea, or rising. I flipped through it. Oddly, about half the pages were torn out. London was there, but not Paris. Tahiti, but not Hawaii. There didn't seem to be any logical pattern. Spain, now that was interesting. With no warning, I coughed explosively, spattering blood, and there was a sudden spike of pain in my chest. I couldn't breathe. My back arched in reflex, and I couldn't reach the bell, and a dark red cloud enveloped everything. It smelled like hot metal. The pain doubled and redoubled, and the red deepened to black. I was sitting at a small table in bright sunshine on a broad pedestrian avenue that was almost deserted. In front of me, a stack of cages filled with bright birds on top of cages with rabbits. The birds were finches, constantly flurrying and chirping. Were the rabbits pets or food? Where was I? Bruce came up from behind me with two small cups of coffee. Bienvenido a Barcelona, he said. Welcome to Barcelona. ¿Cómo estás? I said, the words somehow coming out in Spanish. What's going on? Where is everybody? It's the flu, he said in Spanish, picking up his coffee. People are avoiding crowds. He gestured down the avenue. This is the Ramblas, which ought to be bustling this time of day. Of course, the Spanish flu, they called it. Which was unfair. It's raging all over Europe, but since Spain's not in the war, her press isn't controlled, censored by the government. It became the Spanish flu by default. We were both dressed in white linen suits, straw hats, a couple of dandies. I remember, I've had the flu really bad. I think I remember. Dying of it, verdad. But do you really remember it? Really? I thought and shook my head slowly. It's like a cinematograph. Truly realistic, but like it happened to someone else. Straining to concentrate. It is a machine, like a cinematograph, but much more powerful. The screen is your brain. It runs inside your brain. That's right. Most people don't know that. You can forget it now. And we're not really in Barcelona. We're inside the machine, and it's inside a ship. A ship that's a world. You can forget that now. Drink your coffee. It's not really coffee. Drink it. And forget. I sipped the coffee. It was roasted almost to the point of being burnt, very sweet and also bitter and licorice flavored. The gall and the licorice were absinthe. Forget? Forget what?
Bebemos para olvidar.
We drink to forget. I looked into the oily surface of the coffee. The birds suddenly quieted. A lot to forget this terrible year.
They say the influenza has peaked. The Germans are on the brink of surrender. A new day is coming.
I held up my cup. Al nuevo día. His cup clinked against mine, and I drank off the rest of the potent brew. There was a light touch on my shoulder, and Kate leaned down to kiss me firmly, with her eyes open.
Mi marido, she said.
My husband. She sat down across from us, still staring. She was wearing a spectacular black and red dress, shimmering frill of glass beads. We were newly wed, but the wedding hadn't been here, back home. I'm so glad to see you. Inane thing to say. I'd forgotten.
I was in London. It was grim.
I nodded, trying to articulate a memory.
Not grim here, Bruce said. Shall we go see some Gaudí?
Always, I said. The first thing to do in Barcelona.
Picnic lunch at Parc Güell, Bruce said. Then go see whether they've finished Sagrada Familia.
Fast work if they have. Bruce laughed, but I had an instant flash of false memory, seeing the cathedral finished as a small child.
Jacob? Kate put a hand on my knee. Is something wrong?
I shook my head and laughed. Absinthe for breakfast. Let's go. As we strolled up toward the top of the Ramblas, more people began to appear. Perhaps church had just let out. I wasn't sure what day of the week it was. I put my arm around Kate's waist, and she bumped me with her hip, an affectionate gesture that said, "Not here." That's right, we weren't at home. If we were at home, we wouldn't exactly be sightseeing. Time enough for that, though, later. The Ramblas was beautiful. Trees in bloom, songbirds everywhere. We stood and listened to a gypsy couple, performers dressed like gypsies, perhaps, doing rapid-fire flamenco. The guitarist was very accomplished, high-position work, crisp with blinding speed, and the dancer was appropriately haughty and sensuous, her arms and hands moving in graceful curves, while her high heels beat out a complex rhythm on a round board that had once been painted red. Her dress was a tight, soft glove from breasts to hips, brocade of crimson and gold, and a swirling tease below. She sang in a tongue that was not Spanish, and sometimes not even language, trills and shouts. When they finished, Bruce dropped a few coins in the man's hat, and we continued to the top. There was an open carriage waiting, a kind of landau. We got aboard, men first, and I helped Kate with a touch on her bare elbow that was electrical. The driver seemed vaguely familiar, a dark man with a big, friendly face. He smiled broadly when Bruce said we wanted to take the scenic route to Park Güell. Every route is scenic in Barcelona. Indeed, it was pleasant, though I was distracted by sitting so close to Kate. At the entrance to the Park Güell, there was a little house that sold souvenirs and food and drinks. Bruce chose a bottle of red wine and got some cheese and cold, crisp toast and ripe tomatoes. The vendor opened the bottle and drove the cork back in. I carried the food in a mesh bag. Bruce carried the wine and three tumblers. Kate saw an orchid, purple and bright red, that she had to have, and the man said, "Just take it, no charge." She slid it into her hair right under her small hat, and it perfectly matched the colors of her dress. The path up to the picnic area was like walking on some exotic foreign planet, winding uphill through grottos of stone. Gaudí had designed it with natural caves as inspiration, but these were no plain stalactites and mites. They twisted in tortuous, fantastic ways. There were disturbing stone mushrooms and toadstools that looked as poisonous as the real ones. It was all slightly uphill, and we gained perhaps 100 meters of altitude when the path opened up into a large flat area, the Gran Plaza Circular, that overlooked Barcelona and the sea. There was a fantastic undulating bench along a low stone barrier on the cliff edge, decorated with mosaics of glistening ceramic chips. "The longest bench in the world," Bruce said. 152 meters. He spread a large white silk handkerchief and produced from somewhere a small bottle of olive oil and a paper of salt crystals. "Do your stuff, maestro." No parsley or basil, but you could make pan con tomate without them if you had to. I opened a sharp clasp knife and cut the tomatoes in half, squeezed the pulp of each half onto pieces of toast, drizzled olive oil and sprinkled salt. Meanwhile, Bruce uncorked the wine and poured. Kate and I took glasses. "You didn't give yourself an inch," she said. "I won't be staying," he gestured with a nod. "Business downtown." We clicked glasses and sipped. He picked up a piece of toast and took a bite. "Muy sabroso. Buenos días." He turned and walked back the way we had come, munching on the toast. "He always knows when to disappear," I said. "I have friends like that," Kate said. "Being there for you, but knowing when to leave. How long have you known Bruce?"
I thought about that.
"Forever." We finished off the pan con tomate, and I carved the cheese into slices. It was a dry, tangy manchego, the best I'd had in years.
"You lived here before," you said.
"Long time ago, about a year off and on, learning to cook in the Spanish style." Funny, I couldn't remember the name of the school, but I could walk straight there. That was after a year at Cordon Bleu in Paris.
"Which would you rather cook?"
"Oh, Spanish. Everyone's an expert in French. That's not the way they do it at Le Canard, which is a lie."
She pinched my leg. "You're bad."
It was a postcard day, harmless, puffy clouds drifting in a cobalt sky. We had a light, pleasant breeze, but down on the water the sailboats were leaning dramatically into the wind. We finished the food and most of the wine, sitting hip to hip, watching the city and the water. She cleaned up and put the trash in an ornate wire receptacle. I put the cork in the bottle. See what's at the top? We'd only come about halfway up the hill. It was a pleasant walk along a winding